So, and in no order of importance, let's begin with looking at the Capital Gains Toolkit to see what guidance it gives us. The introduction to the toolkit is on page 3 and is neutral and professional, as you would expect. It acknowledges that most people try and do get their taxes right. The introduction also says that using the toolkit is entirely voluntary. Do remember, though, that this guidance is also HMRC's own published guidance on how it believes the capital gains legislation operates, and the introduction accepts that. Whether the toolkit is appropriate to non-standard or more complex capital gains, land and building transactions, I'll leave to you to decide. Also, don't lose sight of the purpose of the toolkit. It is HMRC saying, these are the most common errors we see, in a way that allows people making the same mistakes to avoid. So again, the application of the toolkit is general. The underlying legislation is what governs the capital gains tax regime, and some care should be taken to avoid seeing the toolkit as the definitive answer on all matters relating to capital gains tax. That is not the purpose. The other interesting point to note, and again in this area on seeing HMRC guidance as just that, guidance rather than law, most of the backup to the toolkit makes reference to HMRC's capital gains manual instructions rather than the law. Again, don't forget, this is purely HMRC's own interpretation of what it thinks the law says, so please be aware of that. The Capital Gains Toolkit then gives HMRC's view of what the main capital gains tax risks are. We have to assume that this is from the most common errors HMRC see. So let's look at that. HMRC say that the five most common areas of risk are 1. Record keeping, 2. Disposals, 3. Valuations, 4. Expenditure, and 5. Reliefs. So, I would suggest that this is a pretty wide-reaching area. Because of that, I'd like to look at what HMRC say on each in a little more detail. So, to start with record keeping. HMRC win the state the obvious competition by saying good record keeping is essential and poor records might mean that not all information is either accurate or to hand. Interestingly, when we come to consider the more detailed checklists, risks and mitigations shortly, record keeping as a risk is then absent. I suspect we are always trying to educate our clients about the value of good records, whatever they're needed for, and the toolkit has no further secrets to reveal. What we can say is that HMRC tell us that good records are better and more accurate than poor ones. Well, moving on, the risk that HMRC call disposals does at least get a little more attention, thought and detail. HMRC tell us that for capital gains purposes, a disposal can be a sale, exchange, gift or all or part of an asset, and that a disposal can also include the loss or destruction of an asset. HMRC say the dates of these occasions are important, but that sometimes this can be more complicated, especially when there are different types of contract involved. So, for disposals for capital gains purposes, what does the checklist cover? For each of these questions, the possible answers are yes, no, or not applicable. So, to the questions. 1. Has the correct date of disposal been established? 2. Has market value being used instead of disposal proceeds where appropriate? 3. Did anyone else have an interest in the asset disposed of? 4. Has the asset been valued by a properly instructed, qualified, independent valuer? And 5. Where any of the consideration is deferred, has the treatment been correctly identified? Now, don't forget, these are just the questions relating to the disposal, so some fairly wide-ranging questions indicating the range of complexity that can exist in capital gains disposals. So, what are the risks, or those apparent common errors, HMRC are trying to help us with? Well, it's pretty simple stuff, it has to be said. The explanation of risks, page 9 of the toolkit, relating to the date of the disposal, are designed to prompt thought to ensure that any gain is shown in the correct tax year, and a little narrative to warn people about the complexities of conditional and unconditional contracts in relation to capital gains tax disposals. Not the most comprehensive range of support, it has to be said. The market value prompt directs advisors to consider whether a market value should be substituted for actual proceeds, and then tries to clarify when this may be relevant. For such a technically complex subject matter, I do question whether this is the right way to deal with advice on such a complicated matter. But at least there is a willingness to try to help, which is no bad thing. I have to say the most simplistic risk considered is the one concerning whether all those with an interest in an asset have disclosed any gain. As I say, a little simplistic, as there is then no guidance on what or how other interests may arise or exist. Again, the guidance relating to instructing a qualified valuer is perhaps not the clearest. Remember, in certain circumstances, the legislation requires a valuation to be substituted for an actual value, maybe if an asset is sold to a family member, maybe if a historical valuation is needed for inflation purposes. However, the legislation does not require the valuation to be by a qualified valuer. Of course, we all understand the relative merits of such an approach, but I would suggest the guidance is a little misleading in suggesting that is the only approach. The guidance on expenditure is largely what you would expect, and part of the best practice I am sure we advise clients of in any event. Basically, the risks HMRC see on expenditure for capital gains suggest they are concerned at the technical allowability of some expenditure that they see, whether enhancement expenditure is always allowable, whether an adjusted expense is due for part disposals, and whether original costs claimed have been adjusted previously for such items as rollover claims. Again, some fairly basic errors, and I have to say, fairly standard fare for a competent tax agent or practicing member. Please read the guidance and be aware of it, but I do think that some areas will be far from new for many advisors. Moving on to HMRC's guidance on reliefs, we do see some interesting aspects. Having listened with interest to tales of MPs house flipping, it's interesting that a large section of the guidance is devoted to private residence relief. We start off with clarity on the only or main residence test, but then soon move on to slightly more obtuse areas, such as HMRC posing the question, has the entity of the dwelling house been correctly identified, or have the gardens and grounds of the dwelling house been correctly identified? Of course, consideration of those two questions along with HMRC saying such risks show the most common errors they see, suggest that HMRC have been successful in challenging private residents' gains claims simply by shrinking or reducing the main house residence that the exempt amount covers. A revealing area and clearly a pitfall to avoid. In fact, whilst I have only raised a couple of the most obvious questions HMRC pose here, the actual toolkit includes 9 discrete and separate risks that HMRC believe exist in private residence claims alone, the most risks by some distance, and perhaps not surprising given that private residence relief claims, when successful, deliver a wholly tax-free gain, of course. The other capital gains relief that HMRC draw toolkit attention to, being the most error-prone, are gift relief, rollover relief, incorporation relief, and entrepreneurs relief. I won't go into great detail now on what the toolkit says about these issues, it's there for all to read, but it's a fairly basic mix of whether the condition for the relief is met, whether the asset qualifies for the relief, and then the computational help needed to get the relief correct. On balance then, for the capital gains toolkit, an interesting mix of the obvious and obscure to help advisors get clients' capital gains just for land and buildings correct.